Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today, our topic is dental health, and we will also be answering any questions you have about pediatric or adult dental issues. Our guests are pediatric dentist Heidi Ospie and adult dentist Shannon McCrane. Shannon is joining us by telephone from Washington, and Heidi is in the studio with me today. So let me tell you how you can get a hold of us if you have questions or comments. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. A toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Heidi, welcome to Line 1.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Shannon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And you are in Washington. That's what Heidi told me. I forgot to ask.
Yep, I'm down here. My little sister is graduating from law school, so I had to come down and visit.
This that time of year. I have a daughter graduating from Western Washington in a couple of weeks, so I understand that. Let's start with you a little bit. Give us a little background, what you're doing, how you got up here, and what you're interested in a little bit.
Yeah, I went to my dental school down in Arizona, and it was at the Arizona School of Dentistry and Oral Health, and I was... it's a school that focuses a lot on public health, and so I met my husband down there, and he's originally from Alaska, and so both of us moved up to Anchorage and, began working at South Central Foundation, and, you know, we've been up there, up in Alaska now working for 3 years.
All right. Heidi?
So I'm originally from Illinois, and I did my dental school at the University of Iowa, and I also met my husband there, and so... I was applying for pediatric residency programs, and this is where I matched. It was my top choice, so we decided to move up here, and now we're in love with it, and we're planning on staying.
So in a medicine, there are pediatricians, and there are adult physicians. We generally call internists, and there's family practice or general practice physicians. And sometimes people don't understand the reason for that specialization and why it exists. You guys want to take a crack at that? Let me start with you, Heidi.
So as a dentist, you can pretty much see anyone you want. And general dentists can see anyone from an infant all the way up until, you know, a 90-year-old. And people specialize based on their interests or what they are really good at. And so for me, I was really interested in kids. And so I'm specializing in just kids and also with a focus of special needs. So I can see adults if they have some special needs. Whereas Shannon, and she can speak a little bit more, she can see everyone. She didn't decide to focus on just one thing. But there's other specialists like endodontists that just do root canals and oral surgeons that just do extractions and surgeries. And so when you decide to specialize, you pretty much are limited to just that specialty, whereas a general dentist has the option to see anyone they want.
You going to agree with all that, Shannon?
I do, and I was going to say what I always liked about dentistry was that family practice idea. I liked the idea of being able to treat kids, because I grew up in a small town, so there wasn't any specialties. So it was you went to your dentist from when you were young until you were old, and I really liked that aspect, being able to service the whole family and any needs that they might have. So.
What I tell people also is that at least as you get into bigger and bigger communities, there is, unfortunately, there's more and more knowledge, and you get better and better and better at what you do all the time. And so now in pediatrics, there's actually hospitalists that just do our hospital stuff, and there's neonatal intensive care people who are 24 hours a day in the hospital with a neonate that has specific problems. So it certainly made my life easier. I'm not on call. I'm not in the emergency room all the time. I'm not trying to take care of patients on the floor in the hospital and in my office. But the other issue is that the amount of knowledge and care that it needs to be applied to care gets more and more difficult. And in big cities where there's plenty of different kinds of illness, it makes sense that they're subspecialists. So in a small community, that's less likely to have a pediatric dentist is where I'm getting to.
Correct.
Because that need is, there's just not enough need in a small community, for example.
Right.
Or maybe an endodontist for the same reason.
Right.
Yep.
All right. So let's get started here. Let's start with kids in general, since I'm a pediatrician. And what's the biggest issue going on in pediatric dentistry?
I would say probably access to care and making sure that all the kids are getting seen. And dental decay is not going away in kids, unfortunately. Actually, in children 2 to 11, it's still increasing despite, you know, water fluoridation and education and having primary care physicians doing early referrals. For some reason, the message still isn't getting out there of how to properly take care of the kids' teeth, when you should first start brushing, when you should first see a dentist. So I think kind of education is still lacking, unfortunately.
So prevention of dental caries.
Correct.
Shannon?
And also, yeah. I was going to say, it's also, I mean, dental caries is a communicable disease. And so it is inoculated into the children's oral cavity at a young age. And if their parents have untreated dental decay, they've got higher amounts of bacteria in their mouth, and they're going to be transmitting that to their children. And I think people don't understand always that, you know, it's a disease that can be spread. And so you got to not only take care of your children and make sure they're taking care of themselves, but you have to as well.
Yeah, that is, I'm sure, a new concept to a lot of people who are listening. So let's talk about caries and what it is, how it happens, and what we know about prevention. Shannon, you brought up the idea that it's an infectious disease and transmittable. You want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. The bacteria in our mouths, it's a Streptococcus mutans, that's like the main form of bacteria. And the way that dental caries are created is that bacteria eats the sugars that we eat, and they are stuck to our teeth in these sticky glycoproteins and your plaque and everything. And so that will then eat the sugars that we eat and put acid on our teeth. It's lactic acid, and then after that acid sits there, if it doesn't get brushed away, it just eventually eats away at our teeth and breaks them down and then causes a cavity. And then at that point, we have to go in there and remove that broken down structure and put a healthy filling or restoration there.
So it's not just providing a source of sugar for the bacteria. It's that certain bacteria have a greater ability to do that, make this process happen, and that can be transmitted from mother to child, for example. Is that what you're saying, Heidi?
Yeah. Go ahead, Heidi.
Yeah, I would agree. And so we consider, you know, that transmission from mother to child, we call that vertical transmission, but it's not only from the mother, and that's another thing that people don't understand. So when you have siblings that are sharing spoons and straws or mm-hmm. toys at daycare, that can also transfer the bad bacteria. And like Shannon was saying, strep mutans is the main one that causes cavities, but there's a lot of different types of bacteria. And the hard thing is there's a lot of research trying to, you know, antibacterial and different things to lower your levels, but there's no research that shows how many bacteria it takes to cause a cavity. So that's why, you know, caries is a multifactorial disease. It's not just the bacteria, it's also the diet, and it's also the frequency and how often, how well you're removing the bacteria. So it's a, unfortunately, a really complicated process.
I like to think there's some genetics involved in everything else. So there are some, am I right? There are some genetic predispositions perhaps to how easy someone's teeth may be susceptible to these processes as well?
Sort of.
Oh,
so
okay.
Shannon, you can expand first if you want.
Oh, I just had a thought that there are some components in terms of the teeth anatomy, how thick the enamel is, how flat or smooth the surface is, how deep the grooves, some anatomy that, you know, will make somebody more likely to trap food in the grooves of their teeth and therefore more likely to get a cavity because they're not as effective or easy to clean.
Right.
But then also the buffering capacity of the saliva.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I can't quote any studies on it, but people that have a more basic saliva may be able to neutralize the acid that's been produced a little easier than some, you know, a different component of another person's saliva.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say. And things that can be inherited, which are fairly rare, there are certain conditions, you know, a lot of people come in and they say, oh, I have soft teeth. My whole family has had soft teeth. We all get cavities. There's
right.
nothing I can do about it. And
right.
majority of the cases, that's not so. There are certain things like amelogenesis imperfecta and dentinogenesis imperfecta. Those are just fancy terms for a genetic inheritable condition where they actually don't have hard enough or enough enamel or enough dentin. But those are pretty rare, like 1 in 7,000 or 1 in 8,000. Majority of the people have normal teeth, or maybe they have localized hypoplastic, which is basically not mineralized hard enough teeth. But those are things that are very localized, and usually those are related to a disturbance during the pregnancy or during early childhood, such as a high fever or a prolonged bacterial infection, because your teeth start developing at 6 weeks in utero and they start calcifying at 4 months in utero. So a lot of moms don't even know that they're pregnant when the teeth are starting to form, and any complications in the pregnancy or early childhood infections. A lot of kids up here get recurrent ear infections, and so things like that can cause disturbances in the teeth that are forming at that time, but that's not in general soft teeth or, you know, inherited prone to cavities.
So what I'm hearing is that for the vast majority of individuals who are having trouble with dental caries or decay, for the most part, they have bacteria in their mouth that is leading to a predisposition for that problem to occur, and it gets worsened by diet.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think probably most people understand that. And even though I've been taught that recently a couple of years ago in some pediatric dental stuff, I keep kind of forgetting the idea that when I'm seeing families or one child with a lot of problems in a family, I ought to be really highly suspect about other kids is the other thing I'm hearing. And it's not just diet.
Exactly. And it's, like you said, if you see a family that has it, and like Shannon had mentioned, mom's having it, it's getting the whole family to a healthy mouth so that you're not continuing to spread the disease. And a lot of the other thing with the diet, a lot of people think, oh, well, they don't have candy. They don't have a lot of sugar. Right. But it's understanding that sugar is in other things, such as 100% fruit juice. A lot of parents think that that's really healthy.
Yeah.
And fruit leather, if it's made with real fruit, and those things are loaded with sugar, and they don't necessarily understand that.
Where's the bacteria? Obviously, if somebody's got bacteria in their mouth, then it's going to be very difficult to keep it from spreading from person to person within a family.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are the preventative factors? Let's talk about how do we prevent dental caries, cavities from occurring. What are the known preventative things we can recommend that people know about?
So, Shannon, do you want me to talk about the children thing and then you?
Yep.
Okay. So, first of all, it's important before you even have your child, making sure that your mouth is, if you're a pregnant mother, making sure that your mouth is healthy and you have an established dental home. Periodontal disease or gum disease has been linked to preterm births, low birth weight deliveries, and preeclampsia. So it's important for the mother's health that she has a healthy mouth. Then when you have your baby, it's important to start cleaning the mouth even before teeth erupt. The tongue can harbor the bacteria, and so you want to start getting in the habit of using like a wet cloth to clean the gums and the tongue. And then as soon as the teeth erupt, when they first come into the mouth, they're not as hard as they will be. They continue to mineralize, so it's important you start brushing them. And depending on your risk, a lot of the kids I see are high risk, but depending on your risk, you don't necessarily have to start using fluoride toothpaste, but for almost all of my patients, I recommend a little bit of fluoride toothpaste as soon as the first tooth comes in. And so that's the cleaning aspect that's preventive. As soon as more teeth start to come in, making sure that you're flossing if the teeth are touching. If they're not touching, you don't necessarily have to floss on the baby teeth. But if you see them touching, you definitely need to start flossing. And then diet, making sure that, you probably know as a pediatrician, we're recommending 4 to 6 ounces of, no more than 4 to 6 ounces of juice per day. Limiting sugary snacks and sugary liquids. In between meals. We really just want 3 meals a day, and if there's snacks in between, they're healthy, they're not sugary. And trying to limit sharing utensils and kissing on the mouth and sharing toys so that you're not, you know, transmitting that bacteria from person to person. Okay. Shannon, do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, and I would add with adults now, there have been there's been some studies in children too. Xylitol is a now very often talked about product. It's a sweetener that has been, it comes from birch trees, so it's a natural sweetener, and they've been putting it in a lot of different products. They've done studies with it in milk, in kids in Peru, and things like that, but it's found in the U.S. As like a hard, you know, rock form, as well as you get it in a lot of gums. And xylitol has been proven to actually kind of change the virulence of the bacteria in the mouth and make it from a high-producing acid bacteria, and it can kind of change the culture a little bit, and it can help protect. But this needs to be with 4 to 5 doses of 5 grams of xylitol a day. So it's a little bit more than what you would naturally get if you just chewed gum, you know, on a regular basis. But it's still a helpful sweetener. There's no sucrose in it, so there's no ability of the bacteria to be able to, you know, break it down and produce acid. And then another thing that I often tell people about is just anytime they have sugar, you just want to get the sugar out of the mouth. We learn about in dental school what's called an acid bath. You have an acid bath in your mouth for about 30 minutes after any type of carbohydrate or sweetener, and that's the time that the cavities are the most active, the bacteria are the most active in producing the acid. So if you can shorten that window, you know, be less than 30 minutes, if you can brush your teeth or rinse with water or chew sugar-free gum, that can kind of help shorten the window. But then if you're eating frequently during the day carbohydrates or sugary things every day, or every drink of that soda that you take, if you sip on it all day long, that means you're going to have 8 hours of perfect time for bacteria to be formed. Whereas if you just have a soda at your lunch and then you stop, then that you have a half an hour, and then your mouth has been neutralized back to a normal level. Anybody who has dry mouth, so a lot of elderly people or anybody who is on a lot of medications, they can be linked to having a dry mouth. And in somebody with a dry mouth, it can be as long as 3 hours. So it's very important for somebody who has a dry mouth to take those steps of brushing their teeth or doing a rinse or something after having a sugary snack to shorten that window of the time when the cavities are very active.
You know, the question comes up, I'm sure listeners who are paying attention would wonder, why can't we just get rid of the bacteria that are causing the problem?
Well, they have, sorry, Shannon, there have been studies where they're trying to specifically target just that strep mutans,
right.
Or have chlorhexidine is a great antibacterial rinse. We use it in periodontal disease all the time. It does have some proven anti-caries effect, but it doesn't stay in the mouth long enough. So we don't have it approved here, but in Europe, they have a varnish that has chlorhexidine in it. That's worked against cavities, but there's no way to sterilize the mouth. It's right. just impossible. And so a lot of research has focused on it, but again, the question comes down to, well, how many bacteria does it take to cause a cavity? And right. there just isn't an answer to that. So that's why it's great to focus on minimizing the amount of bacteria, but unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever actually have a cure. I don't know, maybe 15 years from now, I'll be eating my words, but I don't see it coming.
Shannon, you were going to make a comment?
Just the agreement of that they've been trying to develop some type of inoculation or type of bacterial strain that they could put into a mouth that would be less bacterial producing or acid producing, but that they just haven't had success with anything so far.
Yeah, I mean, again, many people may not want to hear this, but it often may boil down to developing an immunization that might prevent colonization or infection with particular strains. I am not a dentist, but that's a medical approach to many of these problems, because it is very difficult to get rid of bacteria that are on your skin or anywhere else. Have you ever heard of efforts to make you know, in immunizations to the strep?
I've read a paper. I don't have it with me, but there has been research in trying to, they form a different type of strep mutans that does not cause that bacteria or does not break down into the acid, so that they can kind of overproduce and, you know, keep the bad bacteria out. But inevitably, the bad bacteria keep coming back. They find ways to come back and they mutate and then they come back even more virulent. So the research, they're trying, but it just hasn't come into effect yet. Yeah.
And that makes sense. When I first came up here, the idea was to prevent strep throats as we would go into a village. I came up here with the CDC and treat everybody in the whole village for strep infections to try to prevent strep infections. And you could show that everybody, there was no strep anymore, but it didn't take long for a strep to end up back in the village again.
Exactly.
So I have a question that was sent in by email, and it says, I've heard that Diet Coke or dark-colored sodas cause cavities. Is that true? Well, it can't be the whole problem that we've listened to so far, but any comments?
I will say that in Diet Coke, there's no sugar, so that's not causing the bacteria to be able to eat the sugar and cause acid, but Diet Coke itself has a lot of acid, and so acid in the form of lemons or sodas or anything that has carbonation, because carbonation is an acid, that will enhance the ability of the bacteria to, again, break down the tooth. And so anything that's sugary causes that acid, or anything that has carbonation can cause the breakdown of the teeth. And so it doesn't necessarily directly cause cavities in the forms of the bacteria causing them, but it will help assist in the process.
And just to elaborate a little bit, you can see a lot of people that do drink just Diet Coke all day long. If they drink it all throughout the day, you can see the tooth is actually acid etched, and we call it erosion. You just see on the inside surface and outside surfaces, the enamel has just slowly been worn away because of the acid, like Shannon was saying, in the soda itself, even though it's not sugary. And that's not necessarily, that's not cavities, but you're wearing away your strongest layer, the enamel, on the outside of your tooth, exposing it to dentin, which is a lot softer and more susceptible to cavities. But other dark sodas that are not diet definitely can cause cavities.
Okay. All right, we have a caller I want to take. Barry, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Hey, how you doing? I've got a friend. Okay, so it always starts out, I've got a friend. It's not me.
Never heard that.
Yeah, I've got a friend. I mean, her teeth are bad. She's having severe problems right now. She needs to get her teeth fixed, and I've been trying to find out. She's not got a lot of money, and I've been trying to find out a way to get her in to get her teeth fixed.
Sure.
And cost assistance programs, I'm sure there are some. I just can't figure out where they're at.
So the question is, if you're having dental problems and can't afford them, what are the options? Can you guys? Yep. Shannon?
I was going to say, well, if the person can qualify for state funding, Medicaid, that would be one way. But if they're above the level that they can't qualify for that, in Anchorage, there is the Neighborhood Health Clinic, which is on a sliding fee scale. And so you bring in your income documents, and they will have a sliding fee scale to provide services based on an affordable cost. And then there are also several dental offices, if it's a private dental office, that will there's a financing options available called Care Credit, where it's a basically like a credit card that you take it out and then you can pay it off in payments.
Okay, I'm up here in the valley. Where are they, any place here in the valley?
You would very well be able to call some different dental offices and ask if they have any financing or Care Credit available, and then they would be able to give you more information about that. But that's going to be on an individual office-to-office basis. And I'm not familiar with any clinic up there that's on that sliding fee scale.
So the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center in Anchorage might be your best bet. They do have dentists in. It could cost you nothing to whatever you can be determined that is a reasonable thing you can afford. So, Keep that in mind.
Do we have a phone number for Neighborhood Health?
I don't have it with me at this point. Yeah.
Okay. But it's in the phone book.
Yeah. Put it in the computer. Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center.
Yep. And okay. It's on C Street and International, I believe, are the cross street.
Yeah, C and International. Yep. They have a new building. Very nice.
Yes.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for that information. She actually cries because her teeth are hurting her so bad,
yep.
So I got to do something.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Sure.
All right, so we're back to these caries, which we've established are caused by the most part by the interaction of particularly bad virulent bacteria, strep mutans being one, that reacts with the carbohydrates, the sugars as part of our diet, that leads to destruction of the enamel, and that leads to cavities, and you got where teeth touch, it's hard to clean, so you got to floss. And xylitol, we have talked about on this program before. It's been maybe a couple of years. I know the Norwegians, the Swedish, some of them, they do that quite a bit. Is that protect and prevent against these infections, or do you know the mechanism of xylitol? I've actually looked it up a couple of times and I've never got into it myself. I know it's available. It's not strongly recommended in the United States from anything I can see, but it has seemed to be something we ought to mention a little bit more thoroughly here.
Heidi, I talked about it before. Do you have anything that you want to go and
I was just going to add, in addition to, like Shannon said, they can't digest it. They do have an inhibitory effect on, they also affect the bacteria's ability to break down actual sugar. Mm-hmm. So they work in two different ways by, you know, being a substitute for sugar and preventing the breakdown of other sugar. And really, you have to consume a lot of xylitol to reap the actual benefits of it. But like Shannon was saying, the best bet to have any kind of prevention with xylitol is just chewing a stick of sugar-free gum that might have xylitol in it after a meal, just because that will, like Shannon said, it will bring your mouth back up to a healthy, neutral state quicker than if you don't do anything after you're snacking.
Before we go into the break, which we're getting very close to, we've already spent 30 minutes, and I think this is an important issue to get across, so I want to stay with it. Let's talk about fluoride a little bit, you know, where there's lots of misconceptions. My understanding is fluoride's extremely safe, that it has been effective, but we are learning that I was always taught initially that it incorporated in the teeth as they were developing and that's how it worked. But now I hear more and more about the topical effects being more important than the other. And then we went through this period where we're not supposed to give kids fluoride because the fluoride was, at least young children who couldn't rinse their mouth out and spit it out, because it was much more fluoride than was in water that's fluoridated. But now we're back to, I'm telling my parents, you know, I'm seeing a lot of, I think it's okay to use a pea-sized amount of fluoride to brush teeth. So let's talk about fluoride.
Okay.
I think it's been very confusing for the public.
Sure.
And even me at times.
So I'm pretty passionate about fluoride, and I've seen firsthand with coworkers that have kids that are not on fluoridated water, and they're in the dental field, and they know everything about how to prevent a cavity, and their kids still get little cavities. And so I think both systemic and topical are very important. And so I'm very passionate about fluoridated water in the community. I think that is a necessity. I think it should stick around. It's disheartening when communities take it out of the water with the known proven benefits. Just like anything, in excess can be harmful. The big stigma with fluoride, there was the accident in 1992 at Hooper Bay, and that was devastating, and it was basically, what it came down to was a combination of several different mistakes. And it was not just a one-time mistake. They had a malfunctioning fluoride pump for a couple of years that never got resolved. So now there have been several steps to regulate how much fluoride gets put into community water so that it's safe and it's constantly checked and monitored. So I think water fluoridation is a proven, very beneficial thing. And then in addition, topical fluoride, whether it's professionally applied varnishes or the everyday low dose with starting from under 2, a little smear, a horizontal smear just on the bristles, from 2 to 5, a half pea size, and from 5 and up, a pea size. Fluoride toothpaste, that has another huge benefit on the, that's on the surface, and then the water that you drink is what's getting incorporated into your developing teeth. Shannon, did you want to elaborate?
Yeah, I was going to say that the Center for Disease Control has actually recognized water fluoridation as one of the top 10 greatest public health achievements in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge thing. It helps to, you know, reduce dental decay, but there's still a lot that needs to be done. And like what you said, with the ingested fluoride in the water, that is going to be helping when the teeth are developing. So ingested fluoride in anybody, since after the teeth are done developing, it's not going to necessarily incorporate into the teeth when they're developing, but it still, when you're drinking it, it's going to be topically in your mouth if it's in the water system. So you're getting a topical effect from the drinking water, as well as the systemic effect is more important when the teeth are developing, because it will incorporate into that structure and harden it. But it can also topically incorporate into your tooth structure as an adult when you're using your fluoride toothpaste. It will still, the weakened areas, we say, as the acid is breaking down your tooth, it is demineralizing. And as you're taking topical fluoride in toothpaste or fluoride varnishes, then that remineralizes the tooth. And so if you're having a lot of sugar consumption, if you can balance it out with fluoride topically, that's going to, it puts your tooth in a constant balance of demineralization and remineralization. And so you always want that remineralization to win out. And by topical fluoride in your toothpaste daily is going to help with that. And in the water daily, it can help with that. But the key is optimal water level fluoridation.
Okay. All right. We need to take a short break. Shannon, hang on. We're going to just be gone off the air for about a minute or so. Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433. And you can email us during the next 30 minutes or so at line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll continue our conversation with dentist Heidi Ospie and Shannon McCrain. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today, my guests are pediatric dentist Heidi Ospie and general dentist Shannon McCrain. If you've got questions about anything regarding dental health, this is the time to get them answered. You can email to line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call locally at 550-8433, and we have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And as usual, please remember, if you're listening between 7 and 8 p.m. on Monday night, that's a recording, and we won't be able to answer your questions at that time. I have a question. Let's see if I can find it. It came in as an email. So Shannon and Heidi, this question is, has chronic fatigue syndrome been linked to old fillings and deep cleanings at all? So this is a question that keeps kind of coming up at various times. One of y'all want to address this issue?
I would say that I experience in my, you know, with working with patients more often that it's the people that need the deep cleaning that may feel like people that have a chronic infection going on with gums being inflamed and irritated, or a chronic infection of a tooth that that are more likely to have any type of fatigue. I've never heard of it with the healthy state. I've never heard it linked to after any treatment. But people, when they've had deep cleanings or chronic infections that have been with them for several years, and then they are relieved of those chronic pain and inflammation, they feel better afterwards generally.
And as far as the old restorations, there's been a lot of buzz about, is amalgam safe? Is it toxic? Does it cause neurological effects? And the ADA's stance, the AEPD's stance, all of our dental society stances is that amalgam is still a very safe and effective material to use. In fact, sometimes it's the best choice for several types of restorations. And the amount of mercury in amalgam, if placed properly and mixed properly, is very minimal. And there have been no studies that have linked any kind of neurological, you know, behavior disorders or neurological effects because of the mercury in amalgam.
When I get asked these kinds of questions, I try to, you know, remind everybody everything's got side effects. There's nothing without side effects. And first, things that you take should be shown to be effective first. If they're not effective, then why would you take something that's got a potential side effect, is my argument, or the argument of many people who talk about health care and complications. And then the next question is, what's the evidence? And I think it's very clear to me that the very best evidence suggests that these amalgams are extremely safe, mm-hmm. And unlikely to cause chronic disease problems that are often blamed and may have other causes, as Shannon, you had mentioned already.
Yeah.
Okay. We have another caller on the air. This is a caller from Willow. Jerry, you're on line one.
Yeah, good afternoon.
What can we do for you?
Well, I just want to let you know that some information that there are two clinics up in the valley that do operate on the sliding fee scale.
Good.
One is the Sunshine Clinic. That's on the roadway up to Talkeetna.
Sure.
That one there, Talkeetna Spur Road, it's called. Okay. And the other one's called Willow Clinic.
Okay.
All right. I'm not sure. I imagine there must be something in Wasilla, too, but these do operate, you know, and they do have the dental program because I use it myself, so I know that they do have it on a sliding fee scale.
All right. Okay. Well, I hope that the person who called earlier is listening still. So thanks very much for taking the time to call.
All right. You're welcome. Goodbye.
All right. Thank you. I got an email here quickly, another quick question about fluoride. It says, my son was born in 1975 at an army hospital in Germany. They gave me fluoride tablets to take while I was pregnant. Is this sound medicine? Actually, I should be. I guess, was this sound medicine? Things change. Incidentally, I did have some cavities during that time, which brings up the question of dental caries during pregnancy in my mind, which I've run into.
So back in 1975, I don't know what the ADA's stance was, but research has shown now that there is no recommendation to take prenatal fluoride supplements. First of all, fluoride won't cross the placental barrier as if you take it as a supplement. So it's not really benefiting mom or the baby because mom's teeth are already fully developed. And I'm not sure what her stance or what her state of dental health was, but as far as decay, the fluoride supplements would not have been benefiting her for taking care of the decay. She just needs to get the restorations done.
Okay. But what about cavities happening during pregnancy? Pregnancy is involved with just about everything bad, it seems to me at times. Is there any good evidence that the state of being pregnant increases your risk of having dental caries?
Not associated with dental caries. The hormone changes during pregnancy can affect how your body responds to dental plaque and gum disease. So there have been studies that have shown an increase in gingivitis and periodontal issues during pregnancy based on the changes in hormones. But normal oral hygiene and brushing and regular care with the dentist should keep that at bay. It's not like being pregnant causes periodontal disease. A lot of moms I've heard come in and say, when I was pregnant, the baby took all the calcium out of my teeth, and that's why my teeth are weak now. Mm-hmm. There's been no correlation to that. Having a baby is in no way related to dental decay. Now, it could be related to late-night cravings of ice cream and Snickers and that kind of thing, but that's a different story.
Pickles.
As well as I've spoken with several mothers and I had some mothers in dental school who said it was so hard that they had to force themselves to even look at a toothbrush to try to brush their teeth because their gagging reflex is so heightened when they're going through pregnancy. But so they may not be taking as great of care as of their teeth when they're pregnant, especially during those years that the months that they're very nauseous.
And sorry, one last thing about pregnancy. It is safe to have dental treatment while you're pregnant at any stage, but for the mom's comfort, the second trimester is typically what we recommend for getting dental treatment done, just so that she's more comfortable and the baby's already in the second trimester, so they're a little bit more developed and pose less risk if you have to use, you know, antibiotics to deal with an infection or local anesthetic to numb the mom up. But dental treatment during pregnancy is safe.
Shannon, I think it was you that mentioned that your teeth are in a constant state of mineralization, demineralization, and that brings up a question in my mind is that I was in the more recent education that pediatricians have been getting, trying to recognize early dental caries, that I wanted to ask the question if caries are recognized early, and if you all would describe what early, very early caries might look like. It is reversible, is my understanding, and is that something we need to make sure everybody has heard?
If it's still just in the demineralized phase where it hasn't turned into actual dental caries, then you can remineralize it. So what we come and see them is, or call them, refer to them as our white spot lesions.
Right.
And if you have ever seen somebody who's just gotten out of braces and they have those white squares around where those braces had been, those are a good example of what a white spot lesion would look like, because those are areas that were not kept clean, and so they were demineralized. The enamel has been demineralized, and sometimes those white spots will never go away. Generally, they don't go away, so that white spot may always be there, but if it hasn't broken down or broken into the second layer, into the dentin, then it is basically a start of a cavity, but not a full-blown cavity. And so you can keep it stable at that point, but sometimes the discoloration will never resolve.
One more question. I sometimes, maybe the last question on dental caries, but I want to raise the question, can a mother who is breastfeeding have children that get caries?
So breastfeeding in itself is not cariogenic. It's not cavity causing. It becomes cavity causing when you start incorporating other fermentable carbohydrates into the diet. Research has shown several studies, breastfeeding in itself, when there's nothing else incorporated in the diet, it does not cause early childhood caries. As soon as you start incorporating other sugary foods and liquids, that's when the nighttime on-demand breastfeeding becomes a possible cause for cavities. But we definitely recommend if the mom wants to breastfeed, because breast milk has so many great benefits with boosting the immune system, a lot of vitamins and proteins, we recommend that the mom breastfeed as long as she wants, but making sure that she starts limiting the amount of sugary snacks and sugary drinks throughout the day and cleaning the teeth with fluoride toothpaste twice a day.
Karen, you're on line one.
Oh, good afternoon. I just really want to thank Drs. Heidi and Shannon for choosing to stay in Alaska. I think they're both wonderful assets. So, but I also have a question for you, and that is, what can you tell me about halitosis in children and what might possibly cause that?
Yeah.
Bad breath.
Yep. So there was a bark or a noise right in the back of your when you were saying it. So halitosis is the question, bad breath, and it was on our list to try to get to. So I was glad to see you called about that, because I think it's a problem that I don't know that we got great answers for, but let's see what the dentists have to say.
So for me, and Shannon can elaborate a little bit more, there's several possible causes for halitosis, the main one being the bacteria. So if you have a lot of plaque on your teeth, if you haven't been flossing, I don't know if you've ever smelled it, but if you, I like to show this to kids, have them floss their teeth and then smell it, and it's pretty stinky. So if they haven't been flossing and there's food and bacteria that have been sitting there for days or weeks, that can be a big factor in halitosis. A lot of children don't understand that they need to brush their tongue and how thoroughly they need to brush their tongue. And all of those are dental-related things, but some other things that can possibly cause halitosis are undiagnosed GERD or gastric reflux. And also mouth breathers tend to have halitosis, and I'm not sure the correlation, if it's just stagnant because their mouth gets dry overnight or throughout the day, so the bacteria isn't getting flushed like it normally would with saliva, but mouth breathers tend to have halitosis and large tonsils. A lot of moms have told me that once they've gotten the tonsils removed, all of a sudden the breath is a lot better. So I'm not sure if the kids were having recurrent infections and there was a bunch of bacteria and gunk in the tonsils, but
or the mouth breathing goes away.
Yeah, exactly. True.
All right. Shannon, any thoughts?
I'll just add that, you know, with kids and the brushing the tongue, and with adults, that can be a big source. And they do sell tongue scrapers. It's just like a little plastic, you know, knife type thing that just scrapes across the tongue, and you'll pull quite a bit off with that. And so if you have somebody that's having a problem with halitosis, then trying that might, you know, help if that's the source, if it's bacteria that's the source.
Mm-hmm. It might. And I myself, as the grandmother, had my tonsils removed and quit being a mouth breather when I was about this kid's age.
Right.
Yeah. Flu.
Yeah, there was actually a Scientific American article with a specialist that promotes himself, and I think he probably is looking into this. It is a complex issue. It is no question that some chronic infection often leads, whether it's in the mouth, the tongue, the tonsils, and it's the adenoids that really most of the time block our nose and cause us to mouth breathe. The tonsils are kind of default way of thinking about big adenoids. We can see the tonsils, we can't see the adenoids, which are really just another set of tonsils up behind the soft palate where they're harder to see. But my own observation in 30 years is often mouth breathing is associated with more of the bad breath, and for reasons I'm not sure. Maybe it changes the bacteria in the mouth, or at least a more chronic infection, or the tonsils and adenoids are chronically infected at the time they're removed. I don't know. So I think all of those make a lot of sense, including the idea of gastroesophageal reflux disease and GERD. So, Karen, unless you have some really great answer, that's as far as we can take this today, I think.
No, you've given me lots to go on.
All right. Thanks very much for your call. All right. Where do we go now? Gingivitis jumps out on my list. What is gingivitis and how is it related to dental health? Shannon, let's go with you on that one.
All right. Well, so we have constantly biofilms building up in our mouths, and it starts as a plaque, and then if it's not cleaned away, that plaque is just full of bacteria, and that bacteria sitting right on our gums causes an irritation and inflammation in the gums. If a plaque sits on a tooth for more than 24 hours, then it starts to calcify, and that's what turns into calculus or tartar. And then that is even harder you can't remove it with just a toothbrush or floss. You have to actually have a professional dental cleaning done at that time, and the hygienist has to go with those metal instruments and remove. So the gingivitis is the early stages of the inflammation and irritation, and if it is left untreated and that hard substance, the tartar calculus, continues to build up, you get what's called periodontitis, which is when you start having bone loss associated with it. And it's our body that's attacking all that bacteria that's being left along our gum line that then causes the inflammation that destroys our own bone. And then once you start to lose bone around teeth, then you start to get teeth that are mobile or loose, and then if you lose enough bony structure, then that is when you start losing your teeth. So it's a cycle that is continuous, and the way to prevent it is simple, and it's just brushing your teeth twice a day and flossing.
And just to add on that, there was a study, they did this on dental students years ago just to prove that gingivitis is reversible, and it is based on just the pure removal of plaque by brushing your teeth and flossing. They took dental students and they made them not brush their teeth for 2 weeks, and they all got gingivitis, and then they all started brushing their teeth again, and all the gingivitis went away. So I'm kind of glad they didn't make that study on me. That was years ago, but they've proven, you know, it's basic, just brush your teeth and floss.
And gingivitis, that is reversible, but once it turns into periodontitis, when you are losing the bone, that then is no longer reversible. Your bone is never going to grow back. You can prevent it from being lost more, but if you've lost some, you can only stabilize it and prevent more loss, but you can never grow the bone back. And so that's why it's so important if at the dental offices, if somebody has deeper bone loss or a significant amount of plaque and calculus, they need to do a deeper cleaning or scaling and a root planing where they actually have to go underneath the gums to get where that harder buildup is to be able to remove all the bacteria so then the tissue can heal. And once it heals, things will stabilize and the teeth will, if they were mobile, if there's still enough bone structure, they can stabilize and your gums can get hard and everything again. A common thing that I run into a lot, people will say, oh, well, I've flossed my teeth and it bleeds, so I don't floss my teeth because it's bleeding. But in fact, in dentistry, it's actually the opposite. If your teeth are bleeding when you're brushing or when you're flossing, you actually need to do it more, not less. And as you do it more, that bleeding will reduce, and eventually you should have no bleeding if you're doing it on a regular basis.
What about if you've had a little recession already beginning to occur? Is that reversible? I understand the bone loss answer, but mm-hmm. What about, that seems like to me is a tweener. That's in between the gingivitis and the bone loss. Do you know whether we know about whether that's reversible with good night?
Well, people, you can reverse it through surgery where they do a graft, but whether that surgery is going to hold. Because generally the tissue only, a healthy pocket above the gums is, 1 to 3 millimeters of depth. And you're never going to have a healthy pocket of 6 millimeters. So if that bone is, down there and you're trying to build up a bunch of tissue above where that bone level is, it's not going to be healthy. And so it will probably come back down. But sometimes you can get a success if it's a little bit that you're trying to gain, but if it's any significant amount, generally that recession is going to be lost as well. But you can try it, and then it's a periodontist who you'd be seeing, and they can do various types of grafts of the gingiva to try to cover over those receded areas. But it's a little bit more of a fair prognosis.
Okay, we're in our last 5 minutes. I got a couple of hopefully rather short questions. What are wisdom teeth? Do they need to be removed?
Shannon, do you want to take that one too?
Sure. Wisdom teeth are just that third set of molars, and we've been finding evolutionarily that some people don't have them anymore. Some people still have them. They don't have to be removed, but if they're in an unhealthy spot, then they probably should be removed. And so if they haven't grown in fully, or if they're poking only partway through the gums, or if they're in an area where you just can't physically get a toothbrush back there to clean them, if they're still out of the mouth, in the mouth, they can still get a cavity. So if you're not able to clean it, then they should be removed so you can access the second molars better. But just because you have them doesn't mean they have to be removed. So it's something that really you should speak with your dentist and come to a decision together. But in some situations, somebody could have them until they're an old person, and they can keep them forever if they can keep them clean.
And if you are deciding to get them removed, we usually recommend to do it by the third decade, so by your 30s or mid-30s, just to decrease the chances of complications with the surgery.
Yeah.
Teeth whitening. Good, bad. What's the philosophy now?
So from a pediatric standpoint,
let me put it that way.
I don't recommend it in pediatrics, just because the teeth the pulp chambers, the nerves are so big, it can cause a lot of sensitivity. And children's teeth are so, I mean, they're new, they're white. So I don't like to recommend it for children younger than 18 years old. But tooth whitening is proven. It does work. There's several different types. You can get in-office professional whitening, or you can do the at-home Crest white strips. I'm not trying to advertise for them, but, you know, there's several different types, and they all work. Basically, they use a type of peroxide. They use carbamide peroxide or hydrogen peroxide, and they basically oxidize the stains and colors in your teeth on the surface. And there's also options of doing internal bleaching if you've ever had a root canal, if you had trauma to a front tooth years ago and then that tooth got a root canal and over time it's gotten darker. Your endodontist or your dentist can open up the tooth and put a bleach from the inside to bleach it from the inside. So bleaching does work, but I would say ask your dentist about it before just deciding to bleach and being a recurrent bleacher, because you can cause a lot of sensitivity.
All right, we got 2 minutes left. Shannon, what's the most important thing you want people to remember about this program?
I think just making healthy choices in terms of diet and snacking and sodas and juices. We didn't really push soda very much, but, you know, just with anything, the diet is so important in our daily lives in terms of our dental decay. If just try to reduce the amounts of sugar or shorten the length of time that you're having that sugar, and that will give you a big benefit in terms of your oral health.
Heidi?
And for me, we didn't really touch on this, but moms don't really know when children should first see a dentist. So I'd just like to leave it with, as soon as your child's first tooth comes in and no later than age 1, 12 months old, is when you should establish a dental home, whether it's a pediatric dentist here in town or a general dentist that's comfortable seeing kids. But I'd like to leave it with that, because it's really important that your kids get seen soon.
All right, and a final comment by myself. There was an email that came in and asked, do we have any dental programs that are like Project Access? Project Access is a situation where physicians donate their time and sometimes medications for patients who can't otherwise afford it. I'm not aware that that extends to dental care.
I know at least one pediatric dentist that if you have really a hard time accessing care and your insurance isn't going to cover it, he'll do pro bono work. The hospital will still charge it if he has to take him to the OR. But so I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I'm sure every dentist has their own policy on what pro bono work they'll do.
And also the Alaska Mission of Mercy will be having its first event up in Alaska in June of 2014.
April 2014.
April of 2014. Okay. And it's going to be for all ages.
All right. We'll try to promo that a little bit more as the time comes closer again. Thanks very much to Heidi Osby and Shannon McCrane for joining us on Line
Thank
One
you.
Today. We're going to interview Pamela Hyde. She's administrator of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration in Washington, D.C. We'll be talking about substance abuse and mental health, so why not tune into your health at that time? Pat Yak is vice president of public media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer today. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line One, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.